For me, that it sounds more like I'm bragging because I'm telling you all these things. But I did have all these troubles, you know, because, for instance, the business agent, we had to give out vacation checks, and that was the thing I loved the best, even if it wasn't my shop. So I was always, the other business agents, if they have something else to do, you're supposed to come a certain hour and get your vacation check in the afternoon. But I didn't care if it was midday or mid-morning or late in the evening, as long as the safe was open. If a person came from a shop, which maybe it wasn't right, I don't think it was, I mean, I was kind of taking over, but I figured they don't want to do it. Why make him come back twice when you can give him a check?
Mm-hmm.
So I used to give him the vacation check, and May Hamilton didn't like the idea. She didn't like it. And the others didn't say anything. On the contrary, they figured, heck, but then we don't have to do it, you know. But she used to kind of resent it.
Now, so you, the people who were the business agents then weren't really your close friends.
Let's see. For instance, with Jack Spindler and Heim Elstein, those are two men that I worked for many years as organizer and business agent, never had any harsh words. Now, with May Hamilton, I got mad at her once, but it wasn't, I don't know what it was. We didn't stay mad, or you know, sometimes you have a word or two. But I got along with the business agents better than I did with the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the assistant manager. The manager I didn't get along with because I didn't think he was fair. You know, first place because of wage, second place because he had a habit of belittling a person, you know, and make somebody else... He was also very, very one person that showed it more than anybody that I know that he was pro-Jewish was John Ulin. That was the manager, and if they were Jewish, somehow they got better attention. For instance, one time I got a nervous breakdown, not a bad one, like slight, but anyway, the doctor said I had to take time off. Of course, I didn't know how long, so I went to this manager and I told him. And I was crying because it got to me. It was terrible that I had to stop working. And I told him that the doctor says I have to take a leave of absence. Oh, sure, he said, for how long do you want it? I said, well, I'll let you know what the doctor says. Well, he immediately went and hired a Jewish lady for the employment office. See? And I stayed out only 2 months because that's all I needed. And in 2 months, I was back. And I figured, well, gee whiz, if he was sure in an awful hurry to put somebody else, of course he couldn't take my place, but nobody could take my place for this reason, because they didn't speak Spanish. I don't say I was smarter than the others. I think they were all smarter than I was, but none of them spoke Spanish. And
now, what about, now there was, weren't there, earlier, weren't there a couple of Spanish-speaking was this Nick Avila a business agent?
No, he was an organizer.
Oh, I see.
He was the head of the organization department.
I see. So the end, how about someone Alvarez?
No.
Maybe Opal Alvarez?
Oh, you mean, Hope Mendoza? Alvarez was an organizer, and he later on went to work for the labor board.
Oh, and then...
There was another one, Tammy Talavera, that was an organizer.
Oh, I see that they were all organizers.
Organizers,
so
yeah. No.
Once you became a business agent full-time...
Yeah, well, that was a big...
Once you were elected...
Yeah.
There was... You were the only Spanish-speaking...
That's right.
I see.
And
that was true until when?
Until after I got my heart attack.
Oh, when you start bringing in the Feliciano.
Yeah, I got her this Gloria Feliciano from New York. And
so the entire 30 years, you were the only Spanish
agent. Yeah. And the cloaks, they had this Angelita Torres that you saw one day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was the business agent, not with the sportswear, but with the dressmakers for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether she was 3 years or 5 years, but no more.
Mm-hmm.
And she's Mexican,
mm-hmm.
And she was actually a business agent. Now in the cloaks, they didn't have a Spanish-speaking business agent, but they had organizers, and they also had one woman. Her name was Maria del Tiempo, but she was not. Well, she did, I guess, a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. but mostly she was in the office taking care of the unemployment, mm-hmm. signing cards, taking care of the credit union and translating for people and all that. But I was the only woman business agent all the years, you know. We had one business agent for a little while there, this, like I told you, Lupe Medina. And she only lasted, I don't think she even lasted the 3 years. Because she would get elected for 3 years. And she went and got married and took a leave of absence, and that's the end. We never saw her again.
Now, Anita, what do you think, within the local, for instance, and you think, after all, in most of the locals, women were the majority of the workforce in the
garment industry.
Do you think, though, that still the women were treated differently than the men, not the women who were, the, who were in the office at the business agency?
In the shop. The women in the shop. At the beginning, yes, years ago, but later on, no. And I think mostly it was, well, see, they treated the workers like, some instance, they came from New York and they knew more about the union, so they kind of, well, tried to, well, we know more about it than you do, as you know, but I, of course, the men always have the better job, which on those days they, you didn't hear of a woman color. Then later on, finally, they got woman colors. And then the presses mostly, they were men or Negroes. Now, when I say all Negroes, because sometimes there was women Negroes, because see, that was the hard, it's a harder job than an operator. And the operators, there wasn't as many men in our industry as there was in the cloaks, because the clockmakers, most of them were operators. And they, I had, now this didn't happen to me, in the, but I've been told by the people, you know, that the women were treated like, well, like a helpers to the men. And I know some Mexican women used to tell me that they didn't even want the finishers in the union at first, because, and most of them were Spanish-speaking. Now, they felt that because they were Mexicans and they were finishing by hand, but then later on, it, finally everything kind of got equalized, where every Negro, white, or operator, or finisher, they were all according to what they could do. You know, they were treated accordingly.
But within the union itself, do you think, what do you think the attitudes were towards women?
Well, at first, you know, we, like in everything else, we were secondary, you know. And this, let's see, well, for instance, when you elect, well, of course, in the executive board, you had to elect women, there was mostly women. Then if they had a presses local, they were mostly men, so they would have men. Or the when the clockmakers, they had both. The cutters were nothing but men, but there was no women to be elected anyway. But you know what I think, it, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. At least that's my feeling. You know what I think the worst thing is the in New York. You know, the garment workers union has mostly women, the big majority. Do you know that there's only one woman vice president? One? And there's always been only one? If it's, if Rosa DeSoto wasn't there when she left, then Jenny Matthews got elected. And after Jenny Matthews, they had another one. She's a Portuguese. Oh, yeah, I forgot her name. I forget. She's still alive, but I don't remember her name.
Did the women in the union talk about that? And how did they feel about that? Did they ever talk about
it? They talked, but they didn't do anything about it. The one that I used to talk mostly about this was with May Hamilton. Because we were friends. I mean, I would say more friends than anything else, you know. Because she came to my house and I went to her house and visited, you know. And, but our methods were different, how we worked with the people. And we used to talk, and May used to say, well, it's sure funny, but of course they had their own troubles. You know, the Negroes were trying to get forward, so they had two things against them, Negroes plus being a woman. So, but when Jenny Matthews was, I don't know whether she resigned or she, how it happened, because I wasn't at that convention, then of course they put on this Portuguese girl, I forget her name, and now they have another woman vice president. She's in San Francisco. And she's pretty smart.
So there's always just been
one. Yeah, and when they elected her as vice president, not only they killed two birds with one stone. because she's Negro.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a Negro plus being a woman, so they really don't have to worry about it. So they always try to say that they do not discriminate. But when there is 23 men, I think, and one woman, do you think that's discriminating? Of course, in the government, well, no, in the government, they have quite a few women too, but...
But especially in an industry which is predominantly women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt, and I always used to tell them, that instead of having 90% men and 10% women, it should be the other way around.
How did they react when you were telling them?
Well, they always thought we were dumber than the men. It's the funniest thing, but I see some awful dumb men.
Did this bring the women... Do you think the women felt close to each other as a result of this sort of thing?
Well, I think it helped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. The only trouble, like I said before, with why we couldn't get more, and even now you can't get enough women to meet things and to be more active, because unfortunately, of course, with this woman's liberation, it has helped an awful lot. But before, you know, they always have to run home to cook, and mm-hmm. they have children. Especially Spanish speaking, you know, they have to go home and take mm-hmm. care of their husband and children. And the woman's liberation, of course, I didn't think about all of it, but Eileen Clark started long before, and then when we started here in Los Angeles, Mae Hamilton and I went to those meetings, and we used to talk about, well, at least now we'll get, because she was getting also less mm-hmm. money, you know. And so we figured, well, now mm-hmm. we'll get it. In me, I didn't make too much of a protest because I had tried so many times and it didn't work. And I was so close to retirement. And I figured one more year or two, somehow I'll survive.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, I had told, not the manager in his face, but I did tell the head accountant, the manager of the office. I told him, I said, when I retire, I'm going to the labor board, and which I intended to do, to go to the labor board and tell them that... you know, all these years I was getting mm-hmm. less pay. But when Wally came and gave me the raise without me asking for it, I said, oh, well, after all, I don't want to embarrass the union.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm satisfied.
Well, Anita, were these meetings of women from different unions, in other words?
You mean from the... Yeah, they were from different unions.
Mm-hmm.
There was only, I guess, two from our union. Mae Hamilton and myself.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had one from the Amalgamated.
Yeah, sorry, this Miller.
Somebody by McCallan. Do you know anybody's last name? McCallan?
Yeah,
maybe it was, well, there's another one, mm-hmm. I mean. And then the different unions, I forget now which unions. There were quite a few of them.
How many would be at this meeting?
Oh, 15, 20. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to too many meetings.
And it was primarily to try and figure out a way for the union women to get together.
Yeah, and also for child care mm-hmm. and for treatment things, you know. And we sent a letter to, I remember, I didn't see it. I would love to see his face, but they sent a letter with the resolutions to Siggy Arowitz, and we all signed it. And, you know, Siggy knew me very well because, I worked with Siggy for many years. When I was already an organizer is when he came mm-hmm. to Los Angeles. And, but then, of course, I don't remember. I guess I got too involved with the organization department,
mm-hmm.
and then my husband mm-hmm. was sick, and I wasn't feeling good. I was forcing myself. Of course,
mm-hmm.
I was sick for a couple of years. Only I just figured, well, I'm just tired and getting old. That's all. And
Now, when did you start? So, beginning in 1941, you were a business agent.
Yeah.
Until they borrowed you from the organization.
Yeah, and then I went back again 3 years.
And when did you have the nervous breakdown? When you were working so hard?
I was working as a business agent. That was quite a while. Wait a minute, I'll be about. But I had other things that had. See, my son and his wife got divorced.
Mm.
That was one of the things that was awful hard for me. And then I was having trouble with John Eileen. And too much work, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
just too much. And I was a nervous wreck, so I got sick. This was about 19 years ago, I would say.
Oh.
See, that was long before.
Mm-hmm.
Then that was even before I went to the organization
mm-hmm.
department. Then I came back after 2 months and I was all right. And then from then on, of course, I was still nervous, but not as bad as mm-hmm. I was before. And I used to, for any little thing, I used to cry. I still do sometimes now, but not as bad as I used to then. And, of course, when we had this big strike, And in the first place I was heavy. Then I went on a diet. And you know,
during the 6 months
later. Yeah, around that time and before. I'm not trying to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things kind of contributed a little bit. And that check lingerie, what made me so mad is that I couldn't do the things I used to do before. See, and this Ralph Smith was in charge of organization department then, and he used to tell me, and one day I was so tired and so sick and my feet were like this, and I went to him, I said, Ralph, but I can't do it. You know, I just can't. And so I showed him my legs, I said, look at my foot, how swollen it is. And he lifted his leg, you know, his pants, and he says, look at mine. He says, I've had this for 20 years, and I keep on going. And I said, well, maybe you can, but I can't. I couldn't. I mean, I could buy it. So finally, he took me off where I had to be early on the picket line, but I had to be all day long. I was taking and bringing people from the picket line to the office, and then I was the buyer. I used to go to the market and buy the stuff for the workers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we used to have 400 or 500 pickets that used to eat at the union, and I used to go on the shopping. And that took an awful lot of cheese. I didn't realize it at the time.
Mm.
But I used to get home so tired that I couldn't even talk.
Mm. So it was right after the cheek lingerie strike that you had a attack?
Yes. Well, the cheek lingerie strike and the general strike, see, the cheek lingerie lasted, I don't know, for about a year. I don't know, many months. But we had a general strike also, and they were not too long, but this is where I did all the extra work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I did more work than I had done before. It's just that my body wasn't able to take it anymore. I don't think I worked any harder, but I felt much worse. And so when the strike ended and the shop was signed, and then I remember I had some food. I always used to buy enough food for the following day. And I had food left over, so we had a party at the union with all the food that was left over. That was on a Friday. And the following Tuesday, I think, or the Monday or Tuesday, I had the attack. The heart attack.
And you actually had it in the office?
Oh, yeah. I just, when I went to work in the morning, I felt like I had indigestion. And I went to May Hamilton, and I said, May, I said, do you have some of those, she has some kind of a... and passes, you know, I said, I have a very sour stomach. My stomach feels funny. So she didn't have anything. So I think she gave me something that's good for the heart. I don't know what they call it. Some little tiny pills. And I took it. And I felt a little better after a while. Then I went out with one of the new organizers, and I was breaking him in. His name was, and he was Mexican too, Bill Arvallos. And we were organizing a shop, I forgot the name, but it was on San Pedro Street. And at lunchtime, I told him, Bill, I can't get off the car. I just can't move. So you go and see, because we have to go and see these people at lunchtime and see if we can get names and addresses or cards signed or something. And so when he got through with them, I said, well, let's go and eat. So he says, okay. We went to a Mexican restaurant, and I love Mexican soup. So we went to this restaurant. And I had my soup, and while I was eating, I guess I must have gotten awful, awful white. See, I had been sick already in the morning, but I didn't know it was hard or anything. So I couldn't walk to the car. So he says, wait, I'll bring the car around. So he helped me into the car and took me to the office. And I walked into the office, and I sat down, and then I started getting, I was in the employment office, but the employment office it was after, must have been 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something, or two, I don't know. And then I got all this awful, awful pain in here, and then it started shooting up down my arm. And first when I felt the pain in my arm, then I realized it's the heart.
Mm.
And I got scared, and I started crying. And so somebody suggested I should go home. And Wally, the vice president, he wasn't the vice president yet. He was the general manager. He came in, and he had a heart attack. And he says, no, he says, don't send her home. She would never make it. Get an ambulance and get her doctor. Well, we had doctors we had a clinic at the union. But in that particular week, they were closed. It was a vacation time. So I couldn't get any of the doctors from the union. So I called a Mexican doctor that I knew for years, Dr. Servin. And this Bill Arvallos called him and told him that it looked like I had a heart attack. And because that's what Val had said. So he said, well, get an ambulance right away and send it, and it was only about 4 blocks from the union. So the next thing is probably gave me a glass of whiskey. I don't know if that helped or not, but they put me in an ambulance and they stretcher took me out, and that was it. Then I came to the hospital. I must have passed out because I remember they took me into a room where it was nothing but men. It was a big room with 5-6 beds, and somebody said, well, she's in the wrong ward. Somebody says there are only men here, so I said, oh, that's all right with me. I said, they can't do anything to me. I was still kidding because nothing was hurting at that moment. Then they took me to another room, and also with 4 women, and I don't know what happened. I don't remember. I guess I must have, in the evening I had a heart attack. Oh, my husband came to see me, and he was mad because they put me in a room with so many women, and after they found out that I belonged to the Blue Cross and all this, they put me in a semi-private room, and my husband went home. And now I don't know when I had the first another attack, whether it was during the night or when, but I know when I woke up in the morning, I was in intensive care.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed in the intensive, and then I was very sick for, well, anyway, the word went through the shop that I had died. First, that I had been paralyzed. Even to this day, I give a shock to people when they see me, because they think I'm dead. And so anyway, I was in the hospital for 46 days. Mm-hmm. And when I left the hospital, I was a complete invalid. And
you were paralyzed?
Yeah.
Just very weak?
I guess, my legs didn't help me. So somebody said that I had a slight stroke, but they deny it. I don't know. He was the general manager, he was always coming. All I had, the room was always like this with people. And as sick as I was, I wanted company. I didn't want to be alone. And, of course, the doctor just had a fit because I always had company. And elections were coming up, and I said, because I liked him. And I liked his wife very much, too. So I kept saying, well, gee whiz, you're going to be vice president. I won't be around to see you. And he say, oh, don't worry. He said, you'll live to see me vice president. You wait and see. And he went to that convention, and he didn't get elected. How did he get elected vice president? Later. Oh, he also had another heart attack.
Oh.
And he didn't get elected then, but later on, when there was a vacancy, I think they made him vice president. And at the last convention is when they elected this girl from San Francisco. And in the meantime, I can't remember her name. If I had any letters of the executive board, they usually have all the names. Angela Bambacci or something like that was her name. And she was after Jenny Matthews. Yeah. So
in all of those years, you've only been 3 years?
Only, yeah. Yes.
Now, after your heart attack, then you've never gone back to work?
No, I couldn't.
But the union kept you on for years, you'd be eligible for
The union kept me on for, see, first place I was on disability for 6 months. And I used to get my full check. Except, Wally had given me the $20 extra money, which kind of helped, for expenses. So after I got out of the hospital and I started collecting disability, then they took away the $20 because I wasn't using the car anymore, which was all right with me. So anyhow, he kept me on the payroll until my 65th birthday.
And that way you would then become...
Yeah, and then I would have been eligible anyway, except I would have been short on my pension. Because I didn't get on the pension plan from the beginning like other locals.
Mm-hmm.
My local was forced, whether Lady didn't want it or whether the executive board didn't know what it was all about, I don't know. But when we were told from New York, we just had to join the retirement. And that's how we started. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would have had 35 years of retirement, which I only barely made it 25 with that extra year that I was sick. See, so I did get my retirement check and I stayed in the Blue Cross. But
was your husband already sick when you had your heart attack, or he got sick?
My husband had had an operation. But see, my husband had been an alcoholic, I told you.
Mm-hmm.
Then he stopped drinking after he had this operation. But then he had the flu. The Hong Kong flu or the Asiatic or something?
Yeah.
And he had double pneumonia. And from then on, he never recovered. But I didn't, I mean, he had emphysema, and he had an operation for cancer. And he recovered from the operation, but the emphysema got worse and worse. But you know, he used to hide it so well from me that when I was in the hospital, I used to hear his, you know, how he walked, his steps, then all at once it stopped. So I used to think he's kidding with the nurses because he used to kid a lot. It wasn't that, I found out later. He was sitting and catching his breath, so when he walked in the room, I wouldn't know that he couldn't even breathe.
Oh.
See? And I used to wonder that he sits all day by me in the hospital. Later on, about a month later, because the first month I didn't know where I was, I guess, most of the time. But I say to him, well, why are you here all day? I said, don't you feel like eating? And he'd say, well, I'm going to have something downstairs in the cafeteria. Well, I didn't know. See, the doctors didn't expect me to live for 2 months. They didn't think I was going to make it. And so I guess every day they were waiting for me to die. Yeah. So?
And then when did you move out?
I came home and I stayed home a year. And then he started getting pretty sick. And I couldn't walk after. See, my house was right down the street. And I had a bedroom downstairs. So, and I wanted to go to the desert because I figured it would help my husband's emphysema. Because I had a friend that her husband had emphysema and he was feeling better. By the way, she was the president of the local ones too. And I had a house already that I had bought years before in 29 pounds. A little old house, but something anyway. And I had a lot. So we had a house, one of those, what they call them, prefabricated, like, put in the lot, and we moved there. And before I moved there, I had another attack. This second time was heart failure. The first time was myocardial infarction where something broke, you know. But the second one was heart failure. But I had already sold the house, and I was staying right at my sister's waiting for my husband to come and pick me up when I got the heart failure. My lungs were full of water, and I couldn't breathe. And they wondered to this day how I made it that I didn't die, because, see, they took me all the way downtown to the hospital, and I couldn't breathe. And when I got there, they said, well, why didn't you take her to the, not to me, but I told my husband, why didn't you take her to the first hospital? You know, she could have died on the way. Well, anyway, I'm still here. And then I stayed in the hospital again, I don't remember whether a month or so. And when I came out to the hospital, then I went to 29 pounds. And I was still in invalid, I couldn't walk, I was still in a wheelchair.
So and he stayed there,
until he died, and even after that, he died in July in 1974. Mm-hmm. And I retired in 72. Mm-hmm. That's when my...
Officially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I stayed until until January 75. And then in the meantime, as sick as I was, we had decided we'd go to Europe, my husband and I, after I started walking. And he never made it because he got sick. But I had promised I was going to go, and I'm a Catholic. Not a good one, but still I tried to do what I promised. I promised to go to see the Lady of Lourdes, and he was going with me, but he died in July and in September, and I could hardly walk, believe it or not, and I went to Europe.
You went alone?
By myself. Of course, if I had known what was going to happen, I wouldn't have gone. I would have either waited another year or I would have not gone. But when it was a terrible trip. Oh, going from one plane to the other and going on the escalators, and the escalator would break, and then they had to carry me. Well, it was a real mess. When I got to Lourdes, I couldn't go on the procession because my feet would move, and some lady went and took some candles for me. But I did go to the church, and I stayed only 2 days in Lourdes. Then I went to Germany, and from Germany I went to Yugoslavia. And in Yugoslavia, it rained every day. I was there 2 weeks. More than 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. And it rained every day of the week. And my cousin didn't have a car, so I had to depend on neighbors to take me somewhere. So I spent most of the time in the house. And I was really, you know, I couldn't go and see my relatives. And rain, and I was scared stiff of the rain. I couldn't take a bus. So finally, my cousin's daughter came from Germany, and she took. Oh, and I had another heart attack in Yugoslavia, mm. at my aunt's house, and it took them 6 hours to find a doctor, because they don't have too many doctors, and the ones they had were in an ambulance someplace. And finally, he came and he told my aunt and my cousin that he didn't think I was going to make it. And when I left from here, and this is what worried me, because when I left, my son, it was the only one that went with me to the airport. My sister got mad at me because she thought I was crazy for going as sick as I was. And my son went with me to the airport, and when I was leaving, he started crying, started choking, and I said, "What's the matter with you?" And he says, "You're not coming back." He says, "You're going to die." But I said, "Oh, don't be silly, I'm going to come back." But when I was sick over there, that was the first thing that came to my mind. That I guess my son was right, and I'm not going back. And I didn't want to be buried over there for nothing. So I kept saying, "God, just don't let me die here. Let me get home somehow." So finally, I stayed in bed for a week. Then I went back to my cousin's house. And then his daughter came from Germany and took me by car. Imagine, I went across the Alps with a heart condition. I don't know, I guess there must be a day when we were supposed to die, because I did everything to kill myself and I didn't. So I went to stayed with her for about a week. Then I went home. Well, I was so sick that I couldn't even walk. And they had to, when she came to see me, she says, "Aunt," she says, "I'm so sorry I didn't go with you to Paris." She says, "I didn't think you're going to make it. You know, I couldn't walk the escalators, and then you have to walk from one plane to another." And finally, when I arrived in Los Angeles, they had a wheelchair for me. So that was easy.
How long were you gone?
I was gone 6 weeks. 6 weeks. And when I came back, my son, of course, was waiting for me. He must have had a shock when they saw me in a wheelchair, but at least I made it home. And of course, I told everybody what a wonderful trip I had, because I was ashamed. But no, I mean, it was silly. Now that I think of it, that was just one of the silly things I did, because I could have waited. But no, sir, I figured, well, I'm going to be dead next year anyway, so might as well go now. And here I am. So.
Now, Anita, after you got better then, did you become involved back with the... Doesn't the union have a retirees club or something?
Oh, yeah, but no, I didn't, because see, I couldn't walk. See, I couldn't walk for a long time, and the retirees club meet only once a month, and I couldn't drive for a long time. And but I joined the senior citizen club here in Monterey Park and one in Montebello, and I do go to the union when they have something doing. Mm-hmm. I'm not to membership meetings mm-hmm. or anything like. I was going to join the senior citizens. Maybe I should, but one lady comes over and visits me, and she tells me they don't do anything. Mm. So if they don't do anything, why bother? You know, maybe they do. I don't know.
Well, are you still in contact with the women in the union?
Oh yes, uh-huh. And I still go over, and every time they have a banquet or something, I'm invited, or I buy a ticket, depends, or somebody retires.
Now, well, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Looking back at your life now, what do you think was the most exciting part of your life, the most exciting time of your life? Can you pinpoint
it? You know, it's funny. I think joining the union.
During that general strike?
Well, getting to be a member of the union and coming to the United States.
When you came, when you were 18 years?
No, I wasn't 16 years.
Yeah. But just since you've been planning it and everything?
Oh, yeah, I was 15 when I started planning. I was in South America, and my mother was a widow. And without telling her about it, I wrote to my aunt that I wanted to come here. Now I'm crying because it makes me remember things. No, the two things in my life that I very most needed is, one, when I came to the United States, because that was God's country. And second, when I joined the union.
You mean when you actually walked out of the shop that day and went to the union, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I became active, I didn't know that when I went to the union the first time, I had no idea at all that I would be an organizer or a business agent or anything like that. I didn't intend to keep on going to school because, see, I was going to be a teacher, but I didn't finish. So I figured once when I can do something, I'll go to night school. Because I didn't want to be a teacher anymore, but I want to be something else. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity presented at the union, without asking for it, without expecting it, was one of those things that just happened. And of course it was just like when you, like it was meant for me, you know. And I just went in heaven, told him everything, like my son said, you have nothing but the union.
What was the most difficult thing, you think, within the union, the most difficult kind of task that you had, the most frustrating thing?
Well, when we have, we organize a shop and we have it, it's all sold up, you know, and we have an election and we lose by one vote. God Almighty, that's terrible. I got 3 tickets one time because we had a union shop. And they wanted, the agreement expires and the employer didn't want to sign up again. It was a real good shop and good union people in it. But they got some new ones, you know. And so we had to have elections. And I had to go and I had a woman helping me in the shop. And we were going to have an election because he absolutely refused to sign up again. Yeah, so sure we're going to. Well, I mean, I've had a union for so many years and all that. And we're going to lose by one vote. And I just couldn't get over it. And it was a woman that, funniest thing happened, this girl had signed up with the union. Of course, there was also a Japanese girl that hurt us quite a bit. But this girl had signed and was helping us, and this other woman was against the union, so she told her that she somehow introduced her to her son and everything, and made her believe that her son was going to marry her. And the girl voted against the union, and then the boy or the man, I don't even know, dropped her like a hot potato. But those are the most frustrating things, I think, when we couldn't organize a shop. Because, like, there was a shop here in East Los Angeles, I forget the name of it. I got that shop organized in no time. Everybody, and the poor, oh, God, it was easy to organize because they were exploiting those women something awful. And what happened? He goes out of business, and everybody's left on the street. Oh, God, that made me sick. Because some of these women were housewives, they couldn't even go to Los Angeles. And I used to feel so bad. I used to say, God, maybe I should have left them as they were, you know. And another thing that was very frustrating to me, and sickening, and sometimes I wonder if I even got the first heart attack then, see, I think I told you this before. I was supposed to go to a convention in Miami.
Right. Yeah.
And
your heart attack was right?
It was after that.
Oh.
See, the first attack, I think it was a heart attack. I thought it was asthma.
Oh.
See, because I couldn't breathe and I was so sick for 3 days I stayed home. But at the time I didn't know, but later on I figured that must be it. Because, see, my name was in every local. I mean, if I was elected from one, I would have been elected from another one. But at the last minute, they started that they're too old, they shouldn't go, or they've been at the convention before and they shouldn't go. And I went to Wally and I told him, I said, you know, Wally, I went to 2 conventions, I said, but many years ago. I said, it's over 20 years since I went from the union. I had been to a convention about 7 years before on my own. Mm-hmm. I had paid my own way, and they gave me a credential from some local that couldn't afford it. So that didn't count because that was on my own. So I figured, well, now that I'm going to retire next year, and it's my turn anyway because we used to take turns, the business agents. And so I used to see everybody, wherever they had a meeting, they nominated me for the convention.
Well, who was it that sent you to that banquet so that you wouldn't be at the meeting?
Well, I imagine it must have been Wally and Ralph Smith and Sam Schwartz and Max Wolf. Now, they must have gotten together. Mm-hmm. I never did find out how it happened, but I do know that I was helping organize. And, of course, by this time I had already told them, being that I'm quitting next year, I don't want to run for business agent anymore. So Ralph Smith told me, well, we're having a banquet in Corona, and I don't even remember what it was. So we have to go. So, of course, I went, but I have lots of friends on the joint board, and I told them to be sure, you know, when they ask, you know, about the convention, to be sure to be, you know, that my name is not forgotten. But they were smarter than I was, because it never dawned on me that they would do anything like that. They came out, I don't remember whether it was Max Wolf or Sam Schwartz that said it, read the paper or and said that Anita Castro declined everything. She declined to be a business agent, which I had, mm-hmm. but she also declined everything else, including the convention. So one woman got up and she said, well, how come I was talking to her today? And she said that she wants to go to the convention. Well, she declined. And of course, then they put it revolt. And I wasn't there. So when I came back the next day, I got a call from a man from one shop. His name was John, and he says, Anita, now what was all the excitement? He says, you said you want to go to the convention, and at the last minute you declined. I said, you're crazy. I said, what do you mean I declined? See, nobody had told me in the office. So I went to find out from, I guess, Ralph Smith, or I don't remember who. And he says, yeah, they said that you declined. No, not Ralph, because he was with me at the desert, but he was nominated to go. He says, well, I don't know what happened, but you declined, so they sent him so-and-so. I'm telling you, I got sick. I just couldn't even talk, and I just started something like a rock fell on my chest. See, and I couldn't breathe. But then I figured, well, I'm getting an attack of asthma. And I went home, and I stayed home 3 days, and I cried for about a week. And I wouldn't talk to Wally, I wouldn't talk to Sam Schwartz, I wouldn't talk to Ralph Smith or anybody, because I figured they all had a hand in it. And then after a while, I figured, well, anyway, it's not the end of the world, and I'm still have one more year to go. I'll manage. So I didn't go to the convention. So what? Because see, I could have said that this and so and started a commotion, but I never wanted to do anything like that at the union. Never. All the times that I could have done it, and I just let it go because first came the union, you know, and I figured, well, serves me right for going on my own a couple of 3 years ago. Which I don't know if would have made a difference, but one thing is true that this business of age had nothing to do with it, because lots of older ones than I did went to that convention, and lots of them that have been before 3-4 times went to the convention, so it was just an excuse, you know. And
how long after that was it that you had your heart?
Well, then this was the convention was in May. Mm-hmm. The first thing that happened, I had this chest thing that I thought was asthma, I think was in March or April, whenever the election time was. And then they went to the convention in May, and I got sick in August. May, when the convention was in May, but when they told me I was not going, was about the end of March. So April, May, June, July, 5 months later. Mm-hmm. And from that day on, I did lose kind of enthusiasm, you know. I figured, what's the use, you know. But and then I guess I was pretty sick, and I didn't realize it. Mm. I was despondent, I couldn't walk, heavy. Then I figured I blame it on my weight because I was heavy again. So I figured all of this, and then the strike, you know, that was a little bit more than this body. I would do it all over again. I would go again. Only I wouldn't be so dumb the next time. I would let them be everybody's helper and everybody has got the credit, which at the time I didn't care because I think as long as they get organized, I don't care.
What would you do differently?
Well, I would stick up for myself a little more. See, I didn't... See,